Bomb Squad. Welcome to The Future of Food, a Radio Cherry Bomb miniseries. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. The Cherry Bomb team toured America last year and traveled from Chicago to Detroit to Birmingham and lots of places in between to ask women what the future of food means to them. Throughout this series, you are going to hear talks and panels that we recorded on each stop. You'll hear from cake artists, executive chefs, food activists, and farmers. These members of the Bomb Squad shared their vision for what's next in their world and the world around them. I hope this series inspires you to stop and think about your future. Thank you to Kerrygold for supporting our tour and this mini-series. Kerrygold is the iconic Irish brand known for its award-winning butter and cheese made with milk from grass-fed cows. For this episode, we're traveling to Dallas, Texas. Our event was held at the Adolphus, a beautiful historic hotel located in the heart of downtown Dallas. We're going to kick things off with baker Sam Cade of Cade's Cakes. She most definitely sees buttercream in her future. Before we get the show on the road, let's check in with our sponsor. Since Kerrygold gave us the opportunity to travel around the U.S. and hear from women all over the country, we thought it would be fascinating to take a virtual detour to Ireland to hear how some of their delicious products are made. One of the cheeses we love in particular is the award-winning Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese. So we placed a call to Sarah Furno, a farmhouse cheesemaker who happens to know the history of how this very unique cheese came to be and who happened to create it.
Well, in the early 80s, what you did is you went to the library and you got a recipe book. So she went to the library and asked for a recipe book for making cheese. And it took 3 months to arrive because most people in Ireland weren't making cheese in the farmhouse kitchen. Maybe a bit of butter, but not cheese.
The she in the story isn't Sarah, but her mother, Jane Grubb, who invented the recipe for the famous Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish farmhouse cheese.
And she started experimenting in my granny's jam pan. Originally, she made hard cheddar-style cheeses. And then she thought, well, why not have a bit of fun and add a bit of spice in there? So she started making blue cheese. And she was the first person in Ireland to try to do that.
Want to try this groundbreaking blue cheese? Or maybe Kerrygold's savory shredded cheddar cheese? Or the garlic and herb butter? Visit KerrygoldUSA.com to check out the store locator and find out where you can purchase any of their award-winning cheese and butter. That's KerrygoldUSA.com. Let's welcome baker Sam Cade.
So hi, my name is Sam Cade of Cade's Cakes. And obviously here to talk about the future of food, but for me personally, when I want to talk about food, I really can only talk about cake. I eat, sleep, and breathe cake all day, every day. And this really all started with a major sweet tooth. And I know a lot of people say they have a major sweet tooth, but no. I have a major sweet tooth. I get Mustang donuts every Friday. If you know, you know. And I also eat cake for breakfast every day. With black coffee, it is just the perfect way to start my day. So this sweet tooth is something to be dealt with. So you combine that with a knack for anything creative that tends to be on the messier side. Any arts and crafts project, really just anything that just makes a huge mess. So you put those two together, that's pretty much cake decorating. It all started, I've worked everywhere from just your typical bakery to a waffle dessert food truck. I worked there when I was down in Austin attending the University of Texas, and I soon began to discover that millennial birthday cakes, I didn't realize this was such a thing. These tended to be shaped. I don't know why I thought I could do shaped cakes because I was just starting. And they also were typically alcohol focused. Hence your 21st birthday cake, a lot of bottles, a lot of drunk Barbies, that kind of thing. So 2 years down in Austin went by like a complete blur. I was attending business classes somewhat and baking cakes on the side and somewhat trying to maintain a social life. And by the end of it, as you can predict, I dropped out of school and took my last accounting final, thank God, and started French pastry school in New York 2 weeks later. So pastry school pretty much just confirmed everything I already knew. in that I don't have the patience for bread baking or chocolate making. I wish I did, but I really just love cake, any cake. I got my absolute dream job at Momofuku Milk Bar. I was so excited. It was the best of the best. And the thing with Milk Bar, if you don't know it, definitely look it up literally right now. I don't even mind. And it's the coolest. The thing with Milk Bar is it's mass production. You seriously make hundreds of cakes at a time, and the mixers are taller than I am, and I'm very tall. So just try to picture that. But with all this mass production, I miss doing the one-on-one cakes that I did down in Austin. I miss that one-on-one customer interaction and the custom orders. So before I knew it, I moved back to Dallas, which is where I'm from, to start doing custom cakes. So that's a little bit about me, and you can kind of realize how I got literally right here. But now let's talk actually about cake. I think my view on cake is probably a little different than you would expect. So I think we can all agree the birthday cake is so timeless. Like, everyone has memories of a birthday cake. Like the concept, probably, of like cheers, few things are as universally celebrated as a birthday with some version of a cake. But as we all know, everything is getting upgraded. And although the birthday cake is so intertwined with tradition, it needs to be upgraded like everything else. We're competing like everyone else. To me, competition isn't really what you would expect. It's taken me, I guess, 5 years of making cakes to realize that everyone has a birthday, and birthdays are 365 days of the year. So there's plenty of birthdays and birthday cakes to really go around for everyone. So you're not really, I don't even think of like competing with other bakeries or other bakers as much of a thing. I feel like now in 2018, in any food industry, you're kind of competing with things like pop cultural performances or like social stunts. Everybody's trying to be the wow factor of the night. So really, what I mean by that, to put in more simple terms, is I want any cake to be the most Instagram aspect of an event. I want it to be the most virtually shared. This sounds like a little aggressive. How are we gonna do that with a birthday cake? It's just a cake, it doesn't matter. So let's back up. I really think that it's about like balancing a mix of competition and inspiration from things like food trends, artists on the rise, pop culture icons, and fashion movements, really anything like that. Like the best example is my most popular cakes are my food cakes. And if you're like, what the hell is a food cake? It's anything you want it to be. It's like your favorite food turned into a cake. So I've done everything from like a Whataburger cheeseburger for 300 people to like a sushi board to an oyster platter, meat and cheese spread, pancake stack. I'm sure you can find your favorite food on there. This kind of cake is a direct correlation to where I think the consumer's mindset is today. If you look through your Instagram feed, what is on there more than anything else? It's probably food. Okay, and I know this crowd's Instagram feed is filled with food. So I think cakes like that are just like perfectly represent that. If you can find the balance, for me, I think of balancing like inspiration and competition with the categories I mentioned before. And then also you just need to add in that personal element that's direct to that customer or consumer. That's when you get the magic. That's when you get the Instagram. That's when you get the virtual share. Little things like this, like I feel like every time I look at my email, I seriously get a crazy request. I don't know where people get these ideas. I think it's from like Pinterest and TV shows and who knows, but everyone seems to be trying to order something crazier than the last. If they're not trying to beat their cake they ordered last year from me, they're trying to beat the cake their friend ordered last week. I seriously have people like email me being like, I need to change it immediately. It's pretty funny and dramatic. I think it's unnecessary. But it's fun. It keeps my day-to-day interesting. So yeah, so I feel like now, in any aspect, people don't always want the best seller or what's the most popular they see. They want something that's completely custom to them and just totally unique and one of a kind. So really, like as I'm baking, there's a few questions I ask myself pretty much every day. I'm like, how can the cakes I make today be different than yesterday? And what trends am I most excited for tomorrow that I can infuse today? And what are people doing in other industries? And how are they setting the social media bar so high? I don't like to look at cakes or food industries. I like to go completely out of the box. So things like that keep my day-to-day interesting and really keep baking cakes different every single day. I know that sounds like it can get repetitive, but it's really, every day is different. I've made about 20 to 30 cakes a week, and I also got D Magazine's Best Birthday Cake 2 years in a row. I'm pretty convinced they just created that category. I think they just created it to get free cake at the event to add to the open bar, but it's fine. I'll take it. So I've had an amazing time here in Dallas, and I just think it's important to keep like the mindset I've developed here of like constantly creating, evolving, and looking around so I can add on to the inspiration and definitely the competition that's going to be waiting for me. So wish me luck. We'll see how it goes.
We couldn't agree with Sam more. Past, present, future, birthday cakes will always be a thing. Be sure to check out Cade's Cakes on Instagram. You will not believe what Sam does with some cake, frosting, and food coloring. Next up are Chef Uno Imanovong of Chino Chinatown and her daughter, Emma, who is a CHOP Junior contestant, a high school student, singer, model, and actress. They talk about their mother-daughter relationship and what they think the future of food is.
I think a lot of people try to talk me out of it. I can't tell you how many chefs and restaurateurs, like, you absolutely do not want to do this. You've lost your mind. I think my mom cried for like 3 days when I told her I'm leaving banking. She's like, why would you do this? It was tough. So at the ripe old age of 36, I decided to leave banking, a really great career, to pursue my passion for cooking. And people say you start cooking and you think it's just a hobby until you start getting paid for it. Then it becomes redundant and it becomes a hassle and it's like you're stressed out. But it's been 5 years and I still love it because I get to inspire people every day, I hope. And more than anything, I get to become a role model for my daughter because, you know, the future of food is truly sharing the love. Because when I grew up, I watched my mom cooking and I was just like, you know, I had to define what love is, first of all. And love is happiness. When you think about love, you think, oh my gosh, your heart flutters, you get butterflies. When my sister and I would entertain at home, we would have friends over and we would just plan this exquisite menu and it didn't matter if we burnt the cake or whatever. It's just like we made food for somebody and there was happiness in it. And so trying to figure out how to put that into a program that actually made money, because it's really tough. And so that's what was like the trying to figure out the recipe was and doing that. And fortunately, I met an amazing partner, Trinity Groves, that gave me $500,000, opened a restaurant called Chino Chinatown, and I really didn't know what the heck I was doing. And thankfully, somebody shared the love with me to teach me and mentor me along the way, because it was a school of hard knocks. I was learning hospitality. I thought, you know, training 300 people across the country that's remote and they're all commission only is so much easier than having 20 people under one roof trying to cook a dinner for somebody, right? No, I was so, so wrong. And Emma was 9 years old at the time.
Yes, we were there all the time.
All the time. I remember she was like, you know, I would have nights and weekends with her, and my schedule was absolutely the opposite of that. So I'll let you give your perspective of how we spent our time together.
Basically, I would go with her on the weekends and on the weekdays till late at night, like really late at night. I even like worked the hostess booth. People were like, how old are you? It's like, I'm like 9, you know. It was cool. But we still found time to, like, steal moments together. Like, in between working, we would walk to a nearby sushi restaurant and have some lunch together. Just fun stuff like that. Or even, like, working in the kitchen together. It was just kind of small stuff. Especially because being there all the time, you really have to find time for each other. Because otherwise, we're just... Yeah. It's no fun.
It was. And so, at one point, I was like, Emma, do you love hostessing? Because the first... the person she sat with, Phil Romano, he slipped her 100. She's like, oh, I love hostessing. But nobody else tipped her. She's like, oh, I don't know about like this anymore. So she ended up in the kitchen, and she was making like little wontons, and she found it really therapeutic. Mm-hmm. And actually, from that, she grew to liking cooking aspect of it and end up on CHOP Junior. And I really tried to talk her out of it. I was like, when you go on there, that means the pressure's on me to teach you how to cook. And so with that said, I think she's a much better cook than I am, to be honest. And so tell us about your training on that.
The training was fun. So like, obviously I tried training with her and that did not work out.
It's like teaching your kid to drive. Like who does that, right? Like you just get annoyed.
Yeah, it was hard. But our solution was to work with other chefs, which was great because they all have like different skills. So In Trinity Groves, I worked with a bunch of different chefs from a bunch of different restaurants. So Chef Terrence taught me how to sear the perfect fish. Chef Gianni and Tita taught me how to make floating meringue and a bunch of other desserts. Chef Jay Valley taught me how to do a bunch of knife cuts. And even Chef Aki, who's here tonight, taught me how to make my own tortillas. And that's kind of a cool thing that I got to use later on, because I have all these little things I know how to do now, which I can use to teach others, or I can use to make food for others. And that's also sharing the love.
What was Chop Junior like? Yeah. How did you do?
Oh, I was runner-up. I, like, burned something in the last stage.
Okay, so let me tell you, like, how ambitious she was. So she gets to the last round, and I can see what's going on, and I'm just really nervous, and I can't talk to her. She's in between things, she's crying because she's, like, so competitive, right? But the last thing was dessert, and she wanted to do a floating meringue. I can't do a floating meringue. It's egg white that's whipped, and one of the desserts was an ant candy lollipop.
Yeah, it was like
she
a Jolly Rancher.
She wanted to make a simple syrup with it, but heat was too hot, so she burnt the sugar, and then she put the egg white in, and she scrambled it, and I was like, oh my gosh. And it was, who were your judges?
Alex Gondeschelli, Kimberly...
From Big Town, Little Town.
And then, Sharon Hackman.
Yes.
Kimberly Schlottman and Sharon Hackman.
That's it. Yeah. She's so good with names. And she made this dessert, and then she put some chiffonade of, like, basil on top and some blueberries. I was like, oh, my God, it's burnt.
I did not know what to
and
do.
And then she called it a breakfast scramble dessert. I was like, and they ate it. Like, oh, this is so great.
I was freaking out.
Her mom taught her how to use herbs.
No, I was freaking out. I turned around, and I was like, I did not think the heat was that high. It's not like the stove at home. I turned around, and I was like, oh, no, that was all my candy. And they were like, oh, you could ask Sabrina for help. And I was like, no, I am winning by myself. Like, I am not going to use somebody else's food. So,
the host goes, well, you know she has candy over there. Why don't you borrow some of her candy? She's like, absolutely not. Out of my own integrity, I am not taking her candy because I'm going to win on my own accord. I burnt my candy, so I'm going to use it. So she had a little bit of a charred taste.
But it was still fun.
That might be in one of these days. Do your friends in school have moms who work?
Yes, but I don't think any of them work as long and hard as my mom.
Oh.
How do you think it shaped you in terms of what you think you might want as a career one day, your attitudes about work?
So, because of experiencing that, I probably am not going to be in the restaurant business.
Let's be honest here.
It's fun, and I love working with my mom, and cooking is a big hobby of mine. Like, I don't know, maybe I would open up, like, a small bakery one day, who knows. But seeing my mom, it's just, like, it's such a hard business. But whenever I grow up, I've always been more of a, I love cooking food. But... I like eating the food, like, probably almost as much, which is saying a lot. And that's why one of the things I wanted to do was be kind of like journalist, food critic type person, because I like writing about things. I would say I'm pretty opinionated. So whenever I was really young, I went to a bunch of the fork fights in Trinity Groves, which was between all of the restaurants, and I would just eat it and make my own little food reviews, which like led to different stuff, like being on Good Morning Texas or going on Crave DFW for... kid food reviews. Mm-hmm. So that's probably one thing that I would want to do when I grow up. But I mean, I guess we'll see. I have a lot of hobbies.
Still trying to figure it out.
What year are you in? You're a junior?
No. I'm a freshman.
You're a freshman. Oh my God. She's only a freshman. Well, you've got some future ahead of you. If you had to tell us what you think the future of food is, what would you say?
The future of food? But I had the same answer. We talked about this together.
That's a good answer.
Copycatter.
No. Yeah, sharing the love. I mean, some of my happiest moments were just learning to cook from other people, cooking with my mom, cooking for my family, watching people's faces whenever they eat it. It's a good experience.
Well, thank you both. It's really an honor to meet both of you. And I hope we get to see
you
in New York.
Thank you guys for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to Chef Uno and Emma for sharing their story and sharing the love. Before we get to our panel, let's return to my chat with Sarah Furno, the farmhouse cheesemaker whose family created the award-winning Kerrygold Cashel Bleu Irish farmhouse cheese. I wanted to know more about Beechmount Farm, Sarah's family farm, so I asked her to tell us a little bit more about this magical place.
We have a lot of trees. That's why it's called Beechmount. We've got lovely deep soils here. It's a very traditional farming area in Ireland. And we've loads of small meadows on the farm. and loads of hedgerows, the cows out in the fields. We've also got ponies and dogs and hens and all the things you'd expect to have on a farm. We live on the farm, so we want to keep it a nice environment to be in.
And in addition to the beautiful landscape, Sarah also has one of the best commutes.
Our farmhouse is in the middle of the farm, and then I don't have far to go to work. I've only got to go just across the farmyard and down at the cheese dairy.
It sounds like Sarah has the perfect situation to go with the perfect cheese. Want to try Kerrygold Cashel Blue Irish Farmhouse cheese for yourself? Or maybe you'd like to try Kerrygold's famous butter or their new slices and shreds. Visit KerrygoldUSA.com to find a stockist near you. Welcome back. We had such a fun time hanging out with the Dallas Bomb Squad. They really are a wonderful, supportive group. Let's meet our panelists. Chef Anastasia Quinones of Tacos de Tacha, Eliza Kilburn of Comeback Creek Farms, cake maker Lo Michelle of Sweet Thangs by Lo Michelle, Chef Janice Provost of Parigi Restaurant, and Chef Misty Norris of Petra and the Beast.
When you think about the future of food, what is the first thing that comes to mind for you? What is the most important thing?
What you're doing hopefully will impact our future, and that's farming and sustainability. I was recently married, and I acquired a stepdaughter. My daughter pretty much eats whatever I eat forcibly. Like, this is what you're getting. There's no other pot and pan in the kitchen. You're eating what I eat. So my stepdaughter is not quite as easily, convinced. So we've had to kind of work towards that. I think for the future, I want parents to, help educate their children's palates. And that a lot of that comes from picking our own produce and picking our own, using things that are sustainable and in season. Not having watermelon in December, but at the peak of its time, which is June, July, August, taking our kids to the farmers market, going to the gardens, and teaching our children, really educating them really what the food that comes to our table, where it comes from, how it's made. That's how I grew up. I know that's how a lot of us grew up. And I really want to see our future kind of grow from that.
So Eliza, you are the future for so many of us. Mm-hmm. So tell us what the future is for you.
This is a good segue coming from AQ. My thought is that the future of food is at home with home cooking. And so, she talked about education and educating the next generation, but also ourselves. So I'm originally from Dallas, now live in rural East Texas, and we really do live in a food desert out there. We have very limited options of where we can shop. We have Walmart and then Brookshire's, which is a local grocery store. We are getting an Aldi, which people are really celebrating. And so with our small food co-op, the farmer's wife, that was really, people knew my husband, and so we were trying to, sell direct to our customers out there, and some of them were familiar with the CSA concept. But also as part of the food co-op, we had a retail brick and mortar store. And a lot of people are coming in, they know about kale because it's popular. They see it on the Food Network. They're watching the cooking shows a lot, but they're not actually doing a lot of cooking at home. They're coming into the shop kind of looking for something in a box that's labeled gluten-free or that's labeled vegetarian, but they don't actually know what to do with the raw ingredients. And we also see that at our farmers market booth, when my husband and I are going to different markets, both in the city. And it's actually changed in the city for us in the last couple of years, but also in the rural areas, which is people approaching our table saying, I'm here for kale. Where's the kale? Here's the kale. Oh, I can't wait to go home and juice it. Well, that's wonderful to juice your kale, but it's also wonderful to remove the leaf from the central stem and chop it and saute it with some garlic and olive oil, build that flavor up, make a soup from it, massage it into a salad, etc. But people in our increasingly busy and digital world are removed from sort of the often mundane, sometimes solitary act of cooking for themselves and feeding themselves. So a lot of us might still remember growing up in the kitchen, witnessing that act that is mundane, let's face it, that is lonely sometimes when you don't have a date and your girlfriends are out. But it has to be done. We have to feed ourselves. So for me, thinking about the future, it's wonderful to have so many, particularly in the city, fresh options, right? We have some really wonderful fast casual restaurants that are doing things fresh and using real food ingredients and sourcing local and small. but ultimately it won't replace what you can do in your own home. And also the education you get just in shaping your palate. You know, what do I like? What is too salty? What is it that I love at my favorite Thai restaurant? Oh, that's a sauce made from coconut milk, and it's got fish sauce and sambal. You know, we've got to make this kind of a part of our everyday lives so that we can know who we are and what our own hunger tells us, you know. And ultimately, that's the best way to have relationship with your family, with your friends, with your partners, with farmers, with ranchers, etc. And to take what you love about eating out at the Whole Foods salad bar or at your favorite restaurant, but bring it into your house. So that's what I think.
That's great. So I'm really curious to hear from you what you think the future of food is.
Well, the future of food for me is definitely life. And what is life without good cake? So traditionally, I'm a Southern woman. I'm raised by very strong Southern women. And when we think about life traditions, it all centered around cakes. Sam talked about her celebration cakes and her birthday cakes. But in the Southern tradition, you bring a cake for every event, whether it's a funeral, if your girlfriend got a divorce, or if you just don't know what to bring, you're going to bring a cake in that traditional Tupperware. And so that's kind of how I got my start. I wanted a grand super sweet 16. MTV was very popular. When I was back in high school, my mom says, no way. How are you going to do this? I said, I'm going to raise money. How are you going to do it? I'm going to sell cupcakes at school. And so that's traditionally how I got my start. After college, when my first job didn't pan out to be that big paying job that we most think that we're going to have, I relied on cakes. When I had a layoff, cakes were there and they were my backbone. But what I saw and what I experienced, that there was a lot of people making cakes, but not a lot of people making good cake. And a lot of people were misinformed on what good cake tasted like as well. So I want to get back to the basics, back to my Southern roots, to getting real tradition, full butter, fat cake. And so that's where I started, and that's where I started. So my typical client is going to be someone who really loves cake, who is really more concerned about what's inside their cakes and the ingredients and those Southern traditions or those memories that they had growing up to make their day special. So I do specialize mostly in wedding cakes. And so in my contribution to the industry is for that client or that bride that wants a beautiful cake, but also a bride that wants something that tastes as good as it looks. So,
all right, Janice. Okay, so future food for you.
As you mentioned, my restaurant's actually been there for about 34 years. And I think part of the secret of its success is the fact that we stay true to our roots. So while you said in the now, while we're talking about the future, I also think looking to the past and the things that have been successful for us are what keep us that neighborhood bistro, keep people coming back, that type of thing. Listening to what people want, you know, kind of making sure that you are in tune with them. If there's something they don't like, being aware of that, being able to take the criticism, constructive or otherwise, and then taking that information and turning it into something that's going to make your client, your customer happy. I think that's what builds a business and makes a business stay successful. I was thinking about this question all day today, and one of the things that I love about food is the fact that it's the one thing that does bring us together. So I don't know, I think I created a new term, and I'm going to like call it mine right now, and I'm going to read you my little quote I wrote, because this is really how I feel about it, is that food is the one thing that we all have in common. It brings people together regardless of your race, your culture, your religion. I like to think of it as social nutrition. We need more of that. Sharing, talking, listening, and spending time together all over a great meal. So social nutrition's my word. Yeah. And if you are, it doesn't matter. We all eat. It's the one thing we have to do, that and breathing, you know? In our politically charged climate and all these, I feel like we need to do more of that. And what better way than breaking bread together, breaking cake together, whatever it might be. And that's kind of my take on it. So hopefully that is the way we continue to proceed.
Wow. Social nutrition is genius. All right, Misty.
I don't know. I've got a couple of different things that I kind of see going on. I mean, kind of, I guess, goes along with a lot of what everyone else has already said, especially, you know, the farm. And I think that's something that's going to be a lot more prevalent in the future very soon. I think it's going to be just restaurants are just going to start using farms. Like, that's just not a thing anymore. You know what I mean? We build our relationships with these farms, and we, you know, a lot of it, I love working with small farms personally at our restaurant, because I feel like we grow as they grow, you know, and it's all about sustainability and it's about supporting your community. So I think that's a huge thing. And another thing I think is really cool is that there's so much more education now that I've seen than it has. I've been cooking for 15 years. So I started when I was, or 17, I'm sorry. I started when I was 15. And from when I came up, it was just like, just go, you know, and that mentality of like, you burn yourself out. You have to work harder than everyone else to prove everyone else wrong. But now, you know, there's this like self-care thing going on, but it's, there's this whole new movement going on that's super cool. And then like, there's this no waste, you know, but also building those relationships with your farms. You're like, hey, how can I help you out? What are you heavy on? You know what I mean? Someone's like, oh, I have a ton of chicken hearts. Cool, I'll take it. You know what I mean? So I think the education, but that goes between the farms, the restaurants, to your customers. And I think there's this huge movement of really cool, very influential chefs that are really pushing and pushing the culture and the public and also other chefs. I mean, there's Star Chefs, there's MAD, there's Philly Chef Conference, there's all these really awesome conventions now that are allowing people, or making it very public about, you know, making less of a footprint and fermenting. And I'm, you know, I did Farfa a few weeks back, and that was really interesting to see farmers kind of finding another outlet. And by doing that, they started fermenting and making pickles and doing all these things that all these chefs are doing as well. So yeah, I think the future of food is going in a really cool direction currently. I think it's going really hard on education, but that's between the farmer chef and your guest and customer. And I think also like the whole self-care, kind of being more aware of what you need to do so you can do that, so you can educate and can learn and can keep going.
It is remarkable to see the conversation so quickly switch over to self-care in terms of chefs, and just over the past 2 years, things like Kat Kinsman, who started website, yeah. Chefs with Issues,
super cool, yeah.
For people in the food world who are facing issues related to addiction and mental health. A lot of chefs have announced their sobriety, which is a very big deal. Are you able to take advantage of what all this conversation is about?
Yeah, well, what I think is helping, I mean, it's never going to be an overnight, like, oh, cool, I'm going to take off a week. And it's, a lot of us are like, no, it's impossible. Like, you're crazy. Like, can't shut my doors for a week. But I think what it does, it gives you a foundation. Like, say, you know, we've been doing this for so many years, a lot of us, and, you know, like I said, starting, I grew up in the environment of, it's cool to get, you know, stuff thrown at you and be called all kinds of names, and you're like, yeah, whatever, and you go home crying every night and you come right back. But personally, okay, not everyone deals with it. I love chaos and I love abuse. I don't know what it is, but, you know. But I think what, you know, what Kat did especially, she opened this forum for people to publicly share, this is what I'm going through. And a lot of it's very influential people that you notice on this site. So I'm not saying that overnight you're going to be like, you know what, I really need to like totally transform, deal with this. But I think what it does, it takes that, when you take a day off, it takes that shame away. Because I think that's what a lot of it is. It's anxiety and shame of like, no, I feel really bad because I took a day off. So I think this is kind of starting to be like, no, you shouldn't feel bad. Like, you have to do this. So hearing all these other people talk and post about it, it's like, oh, cool, like, you know, this person is going through the same exact thing that I'm doing, so I should not feel bad about taking, you know, 5 hours off and then going in, or just taking the whole day off and just saying, you know what, like, tomorrow I'll deal with whatever. And that's impossible. I was talking to my fiance today. I decided to take yesterday off, but now I'm, like, super behind, and I'm like, shit, like, I gotta go back, like, it's gonna be a late night. But it's fine, because I had a whole day to just, like, just sit there and do nothing, literally do nothing. And that's okay, you know? But I feel better about that, knowing that there are other people really making strides to make, you know, self-care and mental health like a main focus. Because if we're messed up, we can't teach anybody. We can't pass on anything. We can't do anything if we can't even think. So I think it's super important to, you know, really try to make an effort to do that for yourself.
One of the questions I had asked everyone on the panel is to project ahead 10 years to the year 2028, which seems like it's a million years away, but it's really not. So AQ, we're going to start with you because you're sitting right next to me. 2028, where do you see yourself?
10 years, I hope to have a restaurant eventually, but my husband is also a chef, and he is in the process of opening his second restaurant with a third one the following year. So hopefully he will retire me onto a beach, and I'll be dead.
I have been waiting for someone to say a beach.
We'll go to a beach in 10 years.
We'll hang out, hopefully. All right, so Eliza.
In 10 years, what do I hope to be doing? I hope that in 10 years, our farm is truly sustainable because of our business from our chef customers, but also from the public, and that they are, that we just have that direct relationship. So, you know, farming is volatile, and we don't know from year to year, and obviously we're dependent on Mother Nature and this and that. But if the demand remains consistent, then we know we always have something to aspire to and work towards. So I'm hopeful for that.
And you know AQ is going to be on a beach somewhere, and you can always visit her. So you don't need your own beach, necessarily. All right, Lo Michelle.
So the future for me, so Wedding Cakes is a little bit different sell than a typical retail bakery. So I really want to tap into more of my Southern roots and do like a tea room / tasting room. So hopefully in 10 years, I'll have my first location open.
Ooh, love that. We'll write about that as soon as you get that open. Janice?
So I'm 50. I just turned 50 this July. Thank you. And my
did you have a millennial birthday cake?
I did not, but I would like one. And I was looking while you were talking. I was listening because I can multitask, and I was looking at your cakes. And those, what are the bugles? Did you that bugle thing is? I mean, I don't even like bugles. It was just like, what? This girl is. She's got 27,000 social media people following you on Instagram. I mean, I'm just like, okay, we need to talk. This is okay. Anyway. So my husband's 10 years older, so he is probably going to retire before I do. My goal would be actually to have someone that comes within the restaurant that works with me that would be kind of like what I was, where they can take it from me and we can work together and transition and do a nice handoff so that the tradition of Parigi stays the same and it's somebody that's like-minded that gets it. All of those things that I said a little bit earlier, that they continue it and then they've got the money to buy it. Then I kind of want to be Paula Lambert when I grow up because she's got the life. She travels and does food tours. Italy, where is she right now? She's
Morocco.
You talk about me being an OG. I'm the OG. I'm like the NG, the new girl. I don't know what that would be. I seriously did Urban Dictionary look it up and see what OG was, but not this time. But no, Paula is, she's been doing making cheese. She's been doing everything we're talking about being, knowing your sources, knowing, she's been doing it since 1984. And after 34 years of doing it, maybe 82, after this many years of doing it, she's rightfully deserved. And she's built a team that understands and knows how her business operates. And she's got great people in charge so that she can go and do this other part of her life, which is her passion of travel. And I went as her assistant one year. And just so you know, an assistant, Stephen Piles, was also one of her assistants. So it's like a really cool thing to get to do. And we went to Tuscany. And the woman knows Italy as well as she does Dallas. She's just, anyway, she knows everywhere. She's one of the most intelligent human beings as well. And so entertaining, so funny. And so I want to be Paula Lambert when I grow up. And I want to, in 10 years, that's what I'd like to be. And write a cookbook. I do want to write a cookbook. That is on my list. Sorry.
Oh, cookbook. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Misty.
I guess in 10 years, I hope to be on vacation, finally. No, but I would love to have, I have a couple more places already in planning to open that all focus on different things, whether it's, you know, a shop where it's purely based on, you know, preservation and, you know, hopefully I'd love to have like a, we do a lot of charcuterie, we get whole animals in. I'd love to have somewhat of a distribution kind of thing going on, only working with like local stuff, you know, that kind of thing. But I mean, yeah, I have no idea where I'll be.
You didn't talk about your other passion.
Comic books?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I want to open a designer toy and comic book store as well. But like graphic novels. I love graphic novels, horror novels in particular. So also, yes, that's definitely going to happen someday.
Is there a way to combine food and comics?
Yeah, probably.
We'll
I mean, I
out.
Thought, yeah, yeah, we'll figure it out. I've thought about a couple different things.
I will say, if there's anyone who can figure it out, it would be Misty. Back to what Uno had said earlier about, you know, being able to embrace learning from people and sharing with people. I hired this one because her plating skills are out of this world. And so she came in with our team for about a week, and we went through the swooshes. We went through kind of like how to make our presentations a little bit more current. And one of the things she said to me was, don't think inside of the box. Just because the tomato is shaped that way, think about different ways. And you're used to slicing it this way or dicing it this way. Think of other ways that you can do it. So if there's anybody that can make food in a comic book store work, it would be Misty Norris.
Misty's also the only person in the world that I know that can make anything inside of a paper boat look amazing. Like, if you
Thank
just
you.
Scroll in a little bit, you couldn't even tell there was a paper boat. And somehow she does it.
You've got a lot of fans, Misty. That's obvious.
From social nutrition to self-care, it's all about taking care of ourselves and others. We felt very well taken care of in Dallas, as everyone was so hospitable. The team at the Commerce Boutique at the Adolphus Hotel threw us a reception after the event. Sam Cade brought us a delicious cherry bomb cake decorated with drawings of our cover girls, if you can believe that. And then Chef Janice invited all of us to her Parigi restaurant for dinner. We got to see Chef Janice bring her social nutrition concept to life. And we also got to try her famous peach cobbler and chocolate glob cake. She said her customers would revolt if she ever took this unique and popular creation off the menu. Our show was produced by Jess Zeidman and supported by Kerrygold. Thank you to all of our speakers and to the amazing members of the Bomb Squad who joined us for this taping. Special thanks to Libby Calloway of The Calloway and the team at the Adolphus Hotel. Thank you for listening to the Future of Food miniseries. Here's to a delicious tomorrow.